Good morning and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. Just gone 11 o'clock in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. This is the 11th day of February 2018. Today on Brass Tack Sunday, we are discussing the much discussed Police Act and its amendments that just passed the second house of Parliament, the Senate, last week. There have been lots of discussions right across the board on social media, on mainstream media, and of course, across the bars, supermarkets, and even in the taxi stands, as I understand it, up to this morning. So lots of people seem to be either confused or concerned about the recent amendment. So in studio today, we have two very special guests that I believe that can bring the education of this bill to you. Joining me on the line, there are two other individuals who will be joining us specifically to discuss this issue, who've been doing some research on it. One is will be well known to you, Simon Alleyne. He is the past president of the Barbados Young Democrats, and he is definitely in support of the bill, and he's actually done some research on it, he said, but he actually wants to bring some education to the people of Barbados as well. But in studio, we have our special guests. We have Miss Kristen Turton. She is the Honorary Secretary of the Barbados Bar Association. I want to welcome you, ma'am, to the studio.
Thank you.
Looking forward to a very educational discussion this morning. And we welcomed another gentleman to you. I don't know if he's familiar to you. He's a bit of a stranger these days. Mr. David Commershaw, Attorney at Law and Social Activist, who one of the persons who would have raised the alarm on this particular act, albeit a little bit too late, as they would say, because it's been passed, but we're hoping that we can actually review this and see where the concerns are and if we can hopefully have it ironed out. So, buckle your seatbelt and prepare for educational discussion on this, the Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials.
So building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. At Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Yes, and we are back. First of all, let's start with opening comments. With no further ado, Ms. Kristen Turton, please. What is your opening comments in relation to this whole issue of the amendments to the Police Act?
It appears to me that obviously there is a significant push to address an apparent upsurge in crime by expanding police powers. And while I appreciate that there needs to be some sort of response, it is my view that these particular amendments may not necessarily address the issues that need to be addressed, and they also affect every citizen in a very substantial way, and a way that there would certainly need to be additional safeguards in place. To my mind, there are three particular things that any amendment of this nature should be providing for if these are powers that it is determined are necessary. One, there needs to be initial oversight in the determination as to when these powers are to be exercised outside of the Royal Barbados Police Force. Secondly, there needs to be some level of accountability in relation to how they are exercised. And thirdly, there needs to be a consideration of compensation for persons who are affected by the exercise of these powers, who are in fact and have never in fact really been considered to have committed any offenses at all, far less the more serious ones with which this particular legislation is attempting to deal. Unfortunately, this legislation, to my mind, does not address those three things at all or adequately enough. And it is my view that there ought to be some level of reconsideration in relation to it. And if such measures need to be put into place, that all of the considerations that I have raised be adequately addressed in any such legislation.
So overall, you see the need for this legislation, but then there are these three concerns. On the flip side, what are some of the benefits you see coming out of a legislation like this?
What it does assuming that it is responsibly implemented, it may allow the police to have greater success in their investigative processes. That essentially is, I believe, the aim of the legislation, and it can be effective, but it, to my mind, the effectiveness of that may be very short term. There may be short-term effects and benefits associated with it from the perspective that the public, if the public buys into it, may believe that they are better protected. And the persons who are prone to commit crime may believe that it is easier for the police to detect crime and that there will be more severe consequences in that process. So that, to my mind, it may have that initial benefit. The challenge with things like this is that it is only initial. What will ultimately happen is that persons who are prone to commit crime will simply find more effective ways of doing so. For example, you have a curfew. You've determined that crime is committed in particular areas. And I believe that by and large, there may be an intention to raid areas to find firearms and so on. So you have these areas that most people in the society might, off the top of their head, be able to identify where they believe these things may exist. The police go, they raid all of these areas, and in the short term, they might be able to have some benefits. What that means is the police have identified those areas, the public has identified those areas, and at that time, there's been success. What will ultimately happen is that persons prone to commit crime may start to hoard their items in areas which might not come to the top of the mind as an area where you might find these things. It exposes people who don't live in those areas as well to an upsurge in crime or to the risk associated with that. So instead of it being, for example, isolated in particular communities, people who at this time feel satisfied that it will not affect them because they don't live in those areas, it will ultimately affect you. So that, yes, there's an upside to the concept, but the way that these powers exist, it's only going to bring some form of short-term relief. Ultimately, we have to address crime at its root. And this certainly doesn't do that. And it simply provides an impetus for persons involved in criminal activity to determine a more effective way to participate in that activity.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Colin Shaw, let's get your opening comments on this police amendment.
Well, first of all, Barbadians need to be aware that these amendments to the Police Act have very serious implications for three fundamental rights and freedoms that are enshrined in our Constitution. And those are the right to the personal liberty of every citizen or resident of Barbados, the right to be protected against arbitrary search or entry to one's premises, and thirdly, the right of freedom of movement within Barbados. Now, if a governmental administration is contemplating enacting legislation that has fundamental implications for the constitutional rights of the Barbadian people, I believe that they have a duty to make this known to the Barbadian people, to put the information out there, and to invite the Barbadian people to engage in a process of dialogue and consultation. This was never done. 95% of the people in Barbados, even now, after this bill has been passed, 95% of our people probably have very little idea about what is contained in this bill and have not been given any opportunity to express how they feel about it or what ideas they might have about it or what reservations and insights. Secondly, these amendments are taking Barbados in the direction of a paramilitary style of policing. Up to now, we have more had a kind of community-based style of policing, where, in fact, we have even designated special community police officers who make the community their base and who get to know the residents and so forth and try to develop a situation of trust in the community. This is moving away from that. This is moving in the direction of the police having the power to isolate and lock down communities, to invade those communities, and having the power within those communities to interrogate residents, to stop and search residents, to stop and search the vehicles and of residents, as well as the homes of residents. So, you know, this, I am very glad for this program, because the Barbadian people need to learn what is actually in these amendments, and so that they can have a considered and intelligent view and opinion about it.
Mm-hmm. And I could agree with you, because as I was getting a drop to the studio, the guy that was driving was saying his friends and they were talking about this. And obviously, if you get your information on the street, sometimes it don't be as credible as you would like it to be. You may take out a part and that may become rumor and you start to spread that around. No, I was telling him about the fact that it was passed, and he didn't even know it was passed. They thought it is something not being discussed. Mm-hmm. So I think that the large majority of Barbadians, number one, we fail by not paying attention to what is happening around us. The media, we fail in terms of putting these things in the people's face, especially something as important as this. And then the various agencies, when you speak to people that would have kind of oversight, the Bar Association, attorneys, the opposition, whoever, I think that they fail in terms of raising the ante enough for the public to pay attention to these very, very important matters. Now, I already have some messages and WhatsApps and calls and so on. We usually open the phone at 20 minutes after 11, but I'm going to open them in right now. You can give us a call at 434-1790 or give us a message at 266-4862.
Corey, I think a good way for us to proceed. Basically, this amendment deals with two items. One, it gives the police the power to impose cordons. That is to cordon off streets or roads in Barbados and to have certain power within those cordoned off areas. I think it would make sense for us to look at what are the new powers given to the police where they cordon off an area, and what are the penalties for anyone obstructing or resisting the police when they are carrying out those powers. Secondly, it gives the police, the Commissioner of Police, in tandem with the Attorney General, the power to institute curfews within geographical areas of Barbados. And again, I think we need to look separately at that. Mm-hmm. What are the new powers given to the police within those curfew areas? And what are the penalties for anyone found resisting or obstructing the police in exercising those powers? Because I think this is the nitty-gritty information that our people need to hear. So if you want me to proceed...
No, I want you to proceed on that, because what I want to get from this exercise, and I usually say this up front, I want this to be an educational exercise for all Barbadians listening now and listening back to the repeat tonight or listening on the blog later if you are at church, to get an understanding of what it is. Because for some people, they believe, as Christine said, this is about greater security for the citizens. For some people, they see it as turning Barbados into a police state, with all these powers being given to an already very powerful police force. So I need, by the end of this program, that the people listening could understand to their mind, which it is, to be able to come down on one side or the other, or may stay in the middle of the fence and understand that there are some positives and there are some negatives, some benefits and some implications. So let's look at this whole idea of the cordons and curfew. In the meantime, I can see if we could pull up a piece, because there was a piece that we played here on VOB from Senator DePisa, who's saying that basically all these powers already exist, and what they're doing is placing it in one place called the Police Act. That is one of the charges she made, and I'll have it played in her voice to make sure I'm not misquoting her.
Absolutely not true. Let's start with the cordon, all right? This bill gives the police the power to cordon off roads or areas of Barbados to establish a cordon. And they can establish a cordon if there's been a motor vehicle accident or if an incident of serious violence has been committed in that particular area. And an instance of serious violence means is a discharge of a firearm or use of an offensive weapon like a knife, which results in a disturbance of the peace or in bodily harm to some person, or where there have been multiple burglaries or other offenses. Now, once the police cordon off an area in Barbados, the police officers have the power to require, to command any person who is within that cordoned off area to remain stationary and to refrain from doing any activity which the police officer feels or has a reasonable suspicion might compromise or remove evidence from the cordon area. So they can make you stay there within the cordon area. Secondly, it gives the police officer the right to search any person found within the cordoned area where that officer has a reasonable suspicion that that person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit any offense. Now, this is what I need to stress. Any offense, not an arrestable offense, not a serious offense. Any offense known to the law, no matter how minor or trivial that offense might be. It also gives that police officer a similar right to search any motor vehicle within the cordon area. Again, once he has reasonable suspicion that any offense, no matter how minor, no matter how trivial, if it's a parking offense then, is committed or is about to be committed, he has the power to search. He may also, and this is very peculiar, he may also require a person to answer any questions with respect to the incident of serious violence or the motor vehicle accident, as may be the case. Now, the word require, the definition of require is command, lay down as imperative, insist upon, instruct. In other words,
like mandatory.
You no longer have the right to say,
remain silent.
I exercise my right to remain silent. And thirdly, they also have the right to require a person to perform such actions as may be reasonably required to prevent crime and other contraventions of the law within the cordon. Other contraventions of the law. So we're not even talking criminal offenses now, even civil offenses. So you're giving the police tremendous power within any area that they cordon off. And this is what concerns me so much. The Act goes on to say that anyone who resists or obstructs or who aids or incites any person to resist or obstruct the officer when he's carrying out any of these duties shall be liable on conviction by a court of summary jurisdiction to a fine of $10,000 or to imprisonment for a term of 3 years or to both. So what you are doing, you are saying the police have the right to cordon off this area, this part of this community. Within that cordon off area, the police have tremendous power to interrogate people, to search people, to stop people, to tell them, you stand there, don't move from there, to require them to carry out actions. And if you resist any of that, if you say, man, I'm not answering your questions, if you say to another fellow, man, don't talk to him, he's a bully. If you resist or obstruct, they now bring out this heavy-handed possible penalty, maximum penalty of a fine of $10,000 or imprisonment of 3 years or both. So
I must admit that I am concerned about it too as well, because when I check the law, there are things that I determined to be even to be grievous that had less maximum penalties than these things. That's one part of the issue that I have. The other thing is, I was asking myself the question as I was reading the legislation, is it a matter of interpretation? No, it says there clearly. Is it a matter of omission? Like, for instance, the fact that they did not the writing words, for instance, for serious arrestable crimes or something like that. Is it just an oversight? Bad drafting, poor drafting. What is the case here?
That's very unlikely, because arrestable offense and offenses of serious violence, those are phrases that are used elsewhere.
Correct.
In the legislation. So it is clear that essentially the intention is to create the environment. And the environment itself is created by an offense of serious violence or by an arrestable offense. But once it's created and the cordon is established, any offense comes into play. Any offense. So that, to my mind, is intentional. But another thing that I wanted to note is that these requirements for persons to do things, for persons to stay, for persons to answer questions, these are not limited to the people who you believe committed offenses. They're not limited to them. Especially the issue in terms of requiring a person to answer, it is not limited to them. It includes people who are mere witnesses. So mere witnesses, persons who were in the area at the time, who may or may not have seen anything, will be required to answer questions. And it should be noted that at no time in the law has there ever been a requirement for a person, a suspect or not, to answer the questions of a police officer. There has never been that imposition. And this legislation changes that substantially, particularly because of the risk and the penalty that can be imposed, even if it is just a maximum.
All right. I want us to use a large part of the program to get this information out. But because of how this program is structured, I want this also to be an opportunity for concerned citizens to ask their questions and to put their queries or even support. I'll read this first message. It says, good morning. Though there's potential for abuse of powers, are we unnecessarily panicking with the establishment of this amendment? Am I wrong in thinking that these powers will be imposed in times of social unrest and not for everyday police operations? how do you all respond to that?
Well, first of all, that is clearly not the intention, because prior to the enactment of this bill, we did have provision within our constitutional arrangements that in periods of some public emergency, that these kinds of powers could be put in place. But that envisaged really some serious situation where the both houses of parliament have to pass a two-thirds majority vote to invoke these extraordinary powers, or the Governor General has to issue a proclamation, and the House of Assembly could either cancel the Governor General's proclamation, or the cabinet gets involved and the House of Assembly. So in our constitutional arrangements, we have provision for those kinds of emergency situations, but they are under the control of the democratic apparatus of governance. That is, the House of Assembly and the Senate basically have to approve it. What this is doing is saying, look, instruments like curfews, instruments like cordons, we are going to make these instruments now part of the everyday arsenal of policing in Barbados. So
one could argue that this is super proactive. I'll tell you why, because even in places like Trinidad and Jamaica, which really would have a different sort of crime situation, they still have their legislation in that way. If a state emergency goes through parliament, we in Barbados, we're not there yet, but yet we want to give the powers to two individuals. Now we have a call on the line from Jamaica, interestingly enough, so let's go over to that call. 25 minutes after 11 o'clock. Good morning and welcome. You're on the program.
Good morning. I listened to all the comments on the new law. I think that we need to understand that the people of Barbados needs protection. I mean, the law-abiding people. That new law will not take away the rights of anybody. I live in Jamaica for almost 50 years now. I've lived through several states of emergency.
Hello? Okay, we seem to have lost the caller. If you feel, please call back. We would have lost you. I don't know if it's on your end or but let's start to respond to what he's saying.
Just a very quick response. Look, the reality is that both Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago have gone down this road of a paramilitary approach to policing for some years now. So instituting curfews, particularly in Jamaica, I can speak more definitively about Jamaica. I mean, they just had the situation in Montego Bay and the parish of St. James, where they imposed the curfew and so forth. So this is nothing new to Jamaica. The question we have to ask ourselves, has it worked? The thinking behind this kind of strategy is that you're trying to suppress crime. And your strategy for suppressing crime is to go the route of more police resources, more police presence, more police manpower, more police power in general. It has not worked in Jamaica. Far from suppressing crime, in 2017, Jamaica recorded 1,635 murders for the year. It has in fact created a situation in many communities of Jamaica of us against them, almost a civil war type situation.
We have the caller back on the line. I don't know if you want to interact with the caller directly, but we have the caller. Caller, come back in.
Yes, I am here.
Right, I ain't sure what happened there, but we lost you. We have you back now. Could you continue?
Yes, I am saying that the Barbadians would be better off with a state of the curfew than if they don't have it. I grew up in Barbados where there was not one murder. Last year, where Barbados had 31. That's a frightening thing for Barbados. Just as 300 murders in Jamaica is a frightening thing. I personally lived through several curfews. The police, first, they don't have the manpower to stop everybody. That's the first thing. They don't have the manpower to search every house. But they seem to have a sixth sense to know who and where to search. And so they need the law to give them that right before any hindrances. The people will be better off.
One of the challenges to what you're saying is I suggest that the police do not now have the ability to conduct searches. They just have to go through a third party and satisfy them that there is a reasonable suspicion. There's no reason why they cannot do that if they are satisfied at present that there are particular homes or places where criminal activity is taking place and a search needs to be conducted. Why can they not obtain a warrant? That is a power that they have.
They don't look the warrant. You know that they have to go to court and all of that to get the warrant.
No, they do not. They can go to a justice of the peace. The simple point is that they have the ability to satisfy that person.
Look, let me explain something to you. You have gunmen here who will have a child. Mm-hmm. I will walk with a child and put the gun in a child's bag. Okay? Now, the police can search a child's bag before a warrant or something like that. But if you have the curfew, the police can, if the police suspect
no,
that, look,
sir,
this child,
excuse me, sir.
What is in that bag.
All right, caller, before Mr. Commission come in, caller, your radio is on in the background and is giving us some feedback. If you could just turn it down. That would be good.
All right, let me try to turn it.
I would just like to call. You see, we need information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Under the Firearms Act of Barbados, where a police officer has reasonable grounds to suspect that any person is unlawfully in possession of any firearm or ammunition, the police officer may, without warrant, search that person or detain him for the purpose of searching him, or search any vehicle or vessel in which the police officer suspects that a firearm is stored. So we have powers to deal with firearms, right? So the caller's point in relation to firearms carries no weight whatsoever. The other thing he said, just a minute, please. You know, let's deal with facts, right?
Yeah.
You said we had 31 murders last year. Well, in 2010, we had 32. Mm-hmm. In 2011, we had 30. So,
yeah,
just a minute.
Caller, just let him finish. They let you finish, just let him finish. Have a dialogue.
Jamaica had 1,635 murders last year. Barbados had 31. What community exists in Barbados right now that you need curfew powers and the kind of powers that the Jamaican police, for example, deployed against Tivoli Gardens? I mean, we're talking about two very different countries, two very different crime situations. And I go further. I believe that the evidence suggests that the approach that the Jamaican authorities have taken in dealing with their crime problem of going this paramilitary approach as opposed to looking at the kind of social interventions that are required to actually reduce crime and the root causes of crime has not worked. And so far in Barbados, we have managed to maintain a relatively civilized, stable, and free society. Some years ago, it used to be every year you would hear that Freedom House had determined that Barbados was the number one freest country in the world. In other words, we have gone about our business in a way that avoided this kind of paramilitary approach to policing. And we should be very careful about going down that road. And particularly without having a serious national discussion about it.
All right, Carla.
Listen. Mm-hmm. All those terms, paramilitary, just to frighten people, because I live here, and I don't know what is meant by paramilitary. Listen, Jamaica have had these laws from the 60s, not just now.
And do you feel safer now than you did last year or the year before?
Very much safer, and I'm going to tell you something now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I live in Kingston. I have a son who lives in Montego Bay. He is a doctor, and there he's thankful that this thing has happened because at night he can travel safely. But let me tell you something that you won't feel I'm speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I feel safer in Jamaica than when I visit Barbados.
Wow.
Whoa.
Okay. Okay. Tell me what took you? Let me talk to the caller. What took you from Barbados to Jamaica?
What take me?
Yes. What brought you to Jamaica?
Several things.
Mm-hmm.
When I came to Jamaica, life was so different. I was young. I was adventurous. There was somebody who loved me that I loved who lived in Jamaica. And it was better off. I came to
Jamaica. So your heart took you to Jamaica?
Huh?
Your heart?
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
Now, how has the crime situation in Jamaica touched you over the years? Because I'm trying to understand why you feel the way you feel today.
Yes, well, let me explain. There's hardly any person that can say that crime has not touched them, either directly or indirectly. That is, you might have a friend who might have been murdered, or a relative. I personally have never been robbed. I've been here 47 years.
Hmm.
I've never been robbed, and I work in a situation where they used to give me a note. The gunman would send a note. Gun warfare today dismissed school, and they never troubled me. I was never robbed. Okay, but there are other people who don't have that experience.
So you've been around it, but it has not impacted on you directly. That's what you're saying.
No, but now listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cousin in Barbados. He was an outstanding footballer. Mm-hmm. And because he just told his friend that he was a better footballer than he, and he was a star, the guy went home and got a gun and said, I'm going to blow you to the stars, put the nozzle of the gun on his chest, and killed him. That happened in Barbados.
And that wouldn't happen in Jamaica?
But it has never.
I understand what he's saying in terms of his direct relation to it here and there. Sir, wait, you care to share your name?
My name is Michael Burrows. Mm-hmm. My cousin is Joyce Burrows from Goodland Main Road.
Okay.
He's a JP. I have such friends such as Colin Arthur, mm-hmm. who is a good friend of mine, Sir Leroy Trotman. Mm-hmm. We all grew up together as boys. Okay, and I want Barbados, I love Barbados, and I want Barbados to know that this state of emergency will not turn Barbados into a police state. It will not hurt Barbados, it will help Barbados.
Have you had the ability to compare the powers that the police in Jamaica have to what this legislation in Barbados is proposing?
It's similar.
Have you read it, sir?
Have you read both?
Pardon me?
Have you read both?
No, but I've been listening. I listened to all the debates in Parliament on your radio. Mm-hmm. I listen to the old local stations almost every day. I'm now retired, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a chance to listen. I listen to the radio in Barbados more than in Jamaica.
So you're at home. You're still at home in Barbados.
And I must tell you that the level of discussion is very high, very civil, you know. I like it, like the type of music you play too. That is why I'm having my input, because I would like to see Barbados return to the day when I was growing up in Barbados.
I think I'm trying to understand you, because one of the comments you made, I'm still concerned, where you said you feel safer in Jamaica than in Barbados, and I mean that when you talk around the world, and I think it's a little unfair to Barbados, but if I'm understanding you correctly, I think what happened is you had a direct brush with crime in Barbados and have not had a direct brush with crime in Jamaica, and that is what's informing your feeling.
Well, let me explain something. On my visit to Barbados more than once, I have had people in Swan Street who followed me, offering me certain things, but I'm not going to say on air, but you should understand, and threatened me, and I had to take on my boyhood tactics and things to get away from the person.
And this was over 47 years ago?
Huh?
And this was over 47 years ago?
No, I'm talking about very recently. I was in Barbados up till last year.
Mm.
Up till last year. And I've had someone who followed me, offering me what I knew, what I didn't want. Mm. And the bad words and things, when I tell them, look, I'm not interested in that and that type of thing. And the bad words that the two men and... I'll tell you where. It used to be the Costas, you can travel from Broad Street through the building over into Swan Street. Okay? And the person, I thought I got away from the two gentlemen, and they were there in Swan Street following me again, telling me, offering me what, and you know, I don't want to say exactly. You should understand what I'm saying.
I have a question for you. Do you believe that the power given to police to establish cordons or curfews would address that particular issue?
Maybe not that particular.
Okay.
Give me an example. There are people, you see, I've seen on. Person taking photograph of the dead victim and skylarking around, you know. Here you have had person who tried to remove like the gun from the person who was being shot or something like that. That would help the police cordon would help police to...
But the police currently, whenever someone is killed, the police currently cordon off the area. The question is not necessarily the cordon. The question is the powers that they're given within the cordon. And
yes,
that is what has been established. And ultimately, a lot of those pictures and videos are not taken with the police standing there. They're taken before the police get there. So my point is that the legislation itself is not addressing any of the issues that you've raised, even, and I extend my condolences, but even the death of your family member, that would never have addressed that, because that is something which is unpredictable, which is, I wish to say,
That's
having been practicing criminal law in Barbados, listen to what I'm saying. Having practiced criminal law in Barbados for the last 8 years, when I first started to practice, the primary form of murder arose in situations that you could not predict. Mm-hmm. And when I say murder, I mean persons being charged with it and not actually satisfying the legal requirement for murder.
Was it crimes of passion?
Exactly. A lot of crimes of passion, a lot of situations where somebody goes in a shop and they end up in a fight with somebody and they end up killing the person, or somebody insults them and they get upset and ashamed and then they go and do something. Those are the types of crimes that you would have seen a lot of. Right?
Yes,
and the simple point is that these powers to the police...
Right, call again, give you the final word. Just one last question.
These powers given to the police are particularly in relation to a curfew only arise where there has been a significant... Well, arguably, it should only arise where there are multiple offenses that have been committed, or the commissioner of police suspects that offenses will be committed. A crime of passion is not one which one can predict and would never be captured by that. It does not allow for any safer an environment than currently exists. And that is the challenge with the legislation as it is currently framed.
All right, Carla, I'll give you the final word. And one of the questions I want to ask you is, what would you recommend for Barbados to treat to these issues?
Well, first, I support the curfew. Okay, support the law as it is now. I don't believe they should make it a political issue. Give the police a chance, and if they find that the police is abusing the people's rights, then repeal it.
Okay, all right. Again, thank you. We can leave it right there. I want to thank you for taking your time from calling us all the way in Jamaica.
I would just like to let listeners, give listeners the information pertaining to the curfew, because we dealt with the cordon, but we haven't dealt with the curfew. Basically, this new law would give the Commissioner of Police and the Attorney General the right to determine what areas of Barbados will be subjected to a curfew, and either a one-day curfew or a two-day curfew, and what would be the curfew hours, so that the legislation does not control even what would be the curfew hours. So theoretically, they could impose a 24-hour curfew. Now, a curfew means that you are required to go back to your home and to remain in your premises for the duration of the curfew hours. Now, once they have established a curfew in a particular geographical area, a police officer has the right, without needing any search warrant, to search any house within that curfew area once that police officer has reasonable suspicion that an offense has been committed. Again, any offense, not an arrestable offense, any offense, no matter how minor, has been committed, is being committed, or is about to be committed on those premises. Secondly, police officer has the right to stop and search any person walking in the curfew area, sitting in the curfew area, again, where that officer has reasonable suspicion that any offense has been committed or is about to be committed. Similarly, to stop and search any vehicle in the curfew area, any vehicle entering the curfew area, any vehicle exiting the curfew area, and again, the justification for search is that officer has reasonable suspicion that any offense has been committed or is about to be committed. And so basically, now there's some other things, but I won't go into everything. But the basic idea is that they can lock off the community. And when you set the bar of searches as low as reasonable suspicion that any offense, not, and I stress again, not an arrestable offense, not a serious offense, that any offense either has been committed or will be committed, is about to be committed, basically what you are saying to the police is, look, you are at liberty to search people, motor vehicles, and houses within these particular curfew areas. And I forgot to mention that the curfew also gives them the power to shut businesses within the curfew areas and to curtail social activities within the curfew area. So you're really talking about the power to lock down a particular community. And I believe that these powers are not going to be used against communities like Sandy Lane and, you know, the upscale communities. I believe that it is the working class communities that are going to bear the brunt of these powers. And if this is what the Bajan people want, then so be it. But let it be an informed decision. Give them the information. Let them know what you were proposing to do, and let them have a chance to discuss it. And if the Bajan people decide that they feel the crime situation in Barbados is so bad that they are willing to give up all these constitutional rights and to subject themselves to this kind of policing, then so be it. But the people have not had the opportunity to make that kind of informed decision.
And that's why glad we're having this program, they could get some of the information on the specific parts of the legislation so that they can make that decision. I'm going to read this one and then we go back to the lines. This one says, blessings flow, Comrade Lane, Brastat's family. It says, let it be known that a huge body of the masses congratulates Mr. Comichon, and he gets our support in speaking out against these enhanced police powers. Special sit-ins to establish corridors in any part of the nation is a responsible move, taking great caution not to violate the Barbados Constitution and by extension the rights protected by the said Constitution. I totally disagree with the attorney, Mr. Gollop, where he established on Channel 8 that a provision or section within the Constitution takes away some constitutional rights for the safety and security of the nation. Instead, the provision does not take away the rights it allows you to implement without violating the supreme law of this land. Regards. To the telephone lines at 12 minutes to noon, and we say good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Lane.
Yes, please.
Mr. Comichon.
Yes, sir.
And your guest, the lady.
Christine Turton.
Yes, well, I didn't hear her name, so good. Mr. Lane, I'm 76 years old. I heard a gentleman from Jamaica. I live in Barbados. And, you know, I still feel happy and free. And Barbados ain't gone bad. Bad. Listen, if he want to know about curfew, I was a seaman on the ship and been to a place there in Manila. There's up here, you'll find curfew. Leave the ship at afternoon. I went by a girl up there. And she tell me when I get there, she said, let me tell you something, you can't go back to that ship. Time gone. And 2 days I had to stand shore. The captain couldn't even get me. Then within 2 days, the curfew up. I got back to the ship. The captain said, I told you all, when you hear about curfew, don't move. You see, you could be shot out there. You could have been shot. So a curfew ain't easy. It ain't easy. So I glad Mr. Comichon bring this here on the table. I heard Mr. Dale Marshall speak about it a little bit in a debate. A little bit in the debate when the first thing would come up. But I sit there and listen now. You see this? This is a bare setup. The policemen do a good job. by bringing a thing and put it in the community. That is nice. Bringing a mobile and putting it in community, that is nice. They've done a good job, a very good job. So I don't like the curfew set up. I don't like it. People don't understand what it means. People don't understand. It look like a joke. Ain't a joke here? It's no joke. I thank you all very much.
All right, thank you. Take another call. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Good morning, Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air. Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Can I crave your indulgence to read two stanzas of a poem by Seamus Heaney, a Nobel poet who's an Irishman and who was talking about the troubles in Ireland? Before, as a context for the comment, the question I want to ask.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. It says, human beings suffer. They torture one another. They get hurt and get hard. No poem or play or song can fully right a wrong inflicted and endured. And the last stanzas. History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up, and hope and history can rhyme. There's some more to it, but I won't take up your time with that. I wanted to ask, this just to confirm, because all I have read so far is the first thing that David sent out. David, this is Margaret Gill. The first thing that David sent out, I got it on a WhatsApp message, so I read it through thoroughly, right? But I haven't heard the discussion on the radio except for now. Most of it I've just missed because I couldn't hear the discussion. I had to turn the radio off. So I want to ask, this is a bill and not an act, right?
You know, it's been passed,
I can't hear it.
It has been passed by both the House of Assembly and the Senate, but it now requires the assent of the Governor General before it can be proclaimed as effective law.
So if it is not proclaimed by if it is not accepted by the Governor,
Can the Governor General refuse?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, she can refuse.
She's entitled to refuse.
Mm-hmm.
So it could not happen.
It could not happen if the Governor General refuses to give assent to it.
Yes.
Right. Which puts a whole different spin on the questions I was going to ask, because I thought I was under the impression that once a Nobel proclamation, but I thought that was a done deal. I didn't think the Governor General had any powers to say that the Parliament is, you know, the both houses of the Parliament need to go
under
back
Section
to
58 yeah. of the Constitution, 58, subsection 3. She may assent or withhold her consent.
Okay. So the person that we need to talk to now, the person that we need to be hearing now very seriously is the Governor General.
That's correct.
Does the Governor General's office have the capacity to hear us?
Oh, you mean
I don't know if she's listening to the call-in program. I
mean,
if you both listening to the call-in program, as well as have a technical capacity for hearing.
If you write to the Governor General at her official residence there in Government Hill, she will get your correspondence.
Okay. Mm. Or if the work, as the workers did in 1937, we marched to Government House with a message and let her see it, we could all get locked up.
No, this Governor General, no. Back then, yes.
No.
This one will lock you up. I'm sure she would give you an audience. I'm sure Dame Sandra Mason would give you an audience.
But you see, I ain't talking about her. I'm talking about, are we going to get locked up before she could even say, come in?
I hope not. But go ahead. I think citizens have concerns, I think they should feel free to address those concerns to the Governor General, because our Constitution does say that she has the power either to assent to the bill or to withhold her assent.
Okay, so another question: Does the Office of Ombudsman have any similar powers that we could approach.
No, not in this case, no.
Not in this case.
No. Mm-hmm.
We can't talk to the and the ombudsman for people who
the
might
the ombudsman is basically to deal with people who have issues with the public servants or public service. Rather than, you know, having to go to court and so forth, if you go to the ombudsman and he can investigate your complaint and maybe help you to resolve it. But he wouldn't have a mandate in relation to legislation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Not even though the ministers are servants of the people, are public servants.
No. Go to the Governor General. Okay. Don't go to the ombudsman on this.
No. I figure people should go to whoever they need to go to. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to find out if that route was a possibility. So the other thing that I want, the last point that I want to, a point I want to make rather than a question is this. You raised the issue of you don't want to see Barbados going down the paramilitary route, right? Mm-hmm. I think you should say further down the paramilitary route because the government of Barbados introduced the military into our crop over and everybody's to the side and ain't keeping the noise.
Mm.
The military, not I'm talking about police, military, mm-hmm. and they are in more vigorous attendance on the last band that comes down on crop over, mm-hmm. which is the one with the fellas and the people that don't have money to buy costumes and mm-hmm. that just want to dance to the music that somebody provides free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had the military in there. We also went down a route of a kind of militarization, well, not militarization, of a leaving of the freedom process that you talked about. We had that happening when we decided to move away from voluntarism in the trade union movement and move towards establishing an industrial relations tribunal. And I'm not hearing the kind of panic. I didn't hear that then as I'm hearing now. But that was a problem. These institutions all come together. They are called the state, right? They come together, right? And I feel two things. One, we don't have to get frightened for something that is already a fact. You cannot get frightened for a piece of legislation that is not a bill. It is now an act, right? You could only get frightened after the Governor General proclaim it, right?
I disagree. I think we need to get frightened before it even becomes an act. I think we discuss these things too late.
But hold on. You can't get frightened now before it was an act. It is an act. That's the first question I asked. It's an mm-hmm. act. It's an act.
But what I'm saying is, I think we should have been afraid of certain parts that we may not have agreed with, whether you agree or not. Earlier, before it gets to Parliament, we should have been discussing it and kind of like articulated our fears before, so that I could have probably, hopefully, you know, kind of determined where they go from there. That's what I believe democracy to be, a good functioning democracy.
Yeah, I don't even know if I agree with that there, but because I made the same point with the Industrial Relations Tribunal, right? You can't be afraid after the fact. You gotta be afraid when the happening. Mm. This is no. Let me just finish by saying, so I could go back and listen to y'all talking. I believe, right, that like that poem says, human beings suffer and human beings hurt and they turn hard. And we don't want to turn hard. And when we talk paramilitary, when we talk police brutality, when we are beginning to separate ourselves into roles and forget that human beings occupy those roles, right?